Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. As you're getting ready, I'll just go through some of the logistical information. Today is Thursday, February 13th, 2025. We have three cases set for oral arguments today. This is the second of the third cases in person. This is A24-1438, Regina Gower versus City of Edina. Counsel for appellant, you will have 15 minutes for your initial arguments, followed by 15 minutes by respondent, and then 5 minutes by appellant for rebuttal, if you so choose. You can raise and lower the podium. This proceeding is being recorded. We will have an audio recording available to all the parties within the next day or two. However, no other recordings are permitted of this proceeding. And counsel, with that, you may proceed. Please state your name for the record and the party you're representing. And also, you'll note that there is a timer on the podium as well, so you can keep track of your time.
Thank you. Michael Bryant, representing Ms. Gower, the appellant in the case. The issue here is whether or not my client has the opportunity to try her case to a jury. There is our appeal, and then there was a cross appeal or a counter appeal that I'll address. There are three issues for the court. One, the question of duty. Second is whether or not there was statutory immunity, and then third, whether or not there was official immunity. The court found that the defendant did not have a duty, and that's what our appeal is based upon. The court also found that there was no application of either the official or the statutory immunity. I'll address our issue, and I'll get to their counterclaim in just a minute, unless you have questions, and I'll go off the way you would like me to.
Counsel, why don't we just go straight to the duty question? What is the evidence that the city had either actual or constructive knowledge of a dangerous condition?
The individual who was out there, Mr. Phillips, had been the one who was sanding. He is the one who was doing the shoveling, so he was aware that there was a condition. He knew that extra people are going to be showing up that day because of the vote that was going on, and they were going into this building in Edina. So they knew there was a need to do something. Our argument, they didn't do a good enough job. When you look at the decision by the lower court, they found that he did a diligent job and that there's no evidence to show they should have known. Well, he was out there sanding and salting, so he knew there was ice. He was working on the condition, so they knew it. But beyond that, the decision on whether or not he did a diligent job or not is a fact issue.
Whether or not he did a diligent job, are you referring to the inspection that he did or the salting?
The court found, if you give me just a second, the court found, it's on the last page of the decision. Let's see. There's no evidence the city breached the duty because.
And I'm sorry. What page are you on?
It's on the last page of the court's decision, page 6.
Okay, thank you.
Actually, yeah, it is the last page. There's no evidence the city breached the duty because the city made a diligent effort to mitigate the danger by salting the sidewalk on two occasions within a 2.5 hour time frame that bookend Ms. Gower's visit or bookend Gower's visit to Edinburgh Park. So it's the court making the decision that what they did was good enough. And our position is the law in Minnesota, the law overall, is that that's a fact issue, whether they did a good enough job. Whether or not doing it twice was good enough. And that's a fact issue. And if it's a fact issue, the jury should hear it. That's not a determination by the court. So
what does the record say about when your client fell, the time of day? I couldn't find that in her deposition, and I don't know if it was somewhere else in the record that I missed.
Off the top of my head, I don't remember. She went in to vote, and I don't think either brief addresses that as far as time goes. I don't remember off the top of my head. I know it was that morning.
So we don't know if it was before he sanded at 8 o'clock or after?
I believe it was in...
Or salted, I guess.
It was, I believe it was either in between or after, definitely after the first time he did it, because he got there early, if I remember correctly, on that day, salted. It's before the vote even started. And she got there to vote. I think voting starts at either 8 or 9 o'clock. So she got there to vote somewhat early, but he'd already been out there once already. But off the top of my head, I don't remember the exact time.
And there's nothing in the record that says anyone else had fallen before your client did or had notified anyone inside the building of any ice issues?
Well, I don't know that that would be required, that someone else tell them. It'd be helpful if somebody else told them.
Well, in terms of constructive notice, I'm just trying to pin down. Your argument, I believe, is the fact that the employee went out and sanded at 10 or at 8 a.m. and wrote on the log, little when asked to describe whether it was ice or no ice, that was the constructive notice of ice in the particular area where your client fell.
Correct, but he salted twice that day, and so the record showed that was a different day for what he did. Now, he said he did that because people were voting, and there was a reason to do that because he had more concerns about more people coming in. But there's a reality when you look at the record, he clearly did it additional times that day, which suggests more of a problem than was there, or at least suggests an issue that a jury should listen to. If they listen to it and they find he did a diligent job, that's fine. I lose a trial. That's happened before. But my client should have that opportunity to present it to a fact finder, the jury, versus the court just deciding on their own that that was a good enough job.
And what about Mr. Phillips' statement in his deposition where he seems to say, I do not believe there was ice that day based on me walking up and down the sidewalk multiple times?
That would be a credibility issue. That would be something that the fact finder could listen to and determine whether or not that is good enough. But that's not a court's issue. I mean, I understand what he said, but the jury should be able to listen to him, let me cross-examine him, and have that opportunity versus the court deciding that's good enough.
But you argue that he clearly knew about the ice prior to Gower falling, but can you point to any evidence in the record of that knowledge?
Well, that's what he's doing. Even when he puts on the log there's a little ice, he's saying that there's ice there. So they're in and of itself admitting. I mean, it's not a situation where he goes out there and says, I don't have to do anything because it's completely clear. What he does is he salts and sands because there's something out there, puts on the log there's a little bit, but I submit that even with the little bit, there was enough there to cause my client to fall. I mean, there's no question my client fell on ice. The argument isn't that the ice didn't exist. Their argument is, well, in their brief, they talk about open and obvious, but I don't see how they can know it's there and at the same time and not do anything about it if it's open and obvious and then say that my client should have seen it. But that's a different argument altogether. The other two issues are the immunity. We submit that that's covered by the statute 466.02, subdivision 4. That we fall under that exception, and that isn't something that applies in this case.
I want to go back to the knowledge issue. So I think everybody agrees that there's something. He said, you know, he didn't see any ice. There's the the little ice, that statement in the recording. He salted at least once before your client was there, maybe twice. It's not really clear on that, but it seems like the district court at least seems to think that they're salted at least once with 50 pounds. Is there any evidence that in the record that the city knew after the salting that there was any ice remaining?
Is there any evidence that after the salting? Well, I mean, he goes out there a second time, which is different. I mean, when you look at the log, he doesn't do that on most days. That isn't
right,
his common practice.
He explained that the reason why he did that is because there are going to be so many people, and 50 pounds seems like an awful lot of salt to apply to a relatively small area. So it seems like he was like really trying to be as careful as possible, knowing that there are going to be a lot of people there for voting.
But if he's being as careful as possible, that's an issue for the jury to determine.
Right.
And that goes to credibility.
But my point is, after he salted the first time, is there any evidence in the record that he was aware that he knew of any ice at that point?
I would submit that him going, well, first, when you put salt down, even if there's ice, it doesn't automatically disappear. It does. It takes time for whatever's there to act. Okay, and I think that's common knowledge. It doesn't. You don't blowtorch it and get rid of it. But beyond
unless
that,
you have calcium chloride.
Still, it doesn't have.
Oh yes, that's. That's
okay.
I'm sorry.
Trust the chemist over here.
I'll believe you, Judge, on that one. I'm just from what I've known on putting stuff out there. But beyond that, the key issue is he goes out there a second time, and there's a reason for him to go out a second time, and that's a credibility issue for the jury to determine. That's not something the court can make a determination on because it's a fact issue. It's not a legal issue. It's not based upon some statute or based upon some case law. It's a fact issue for the jury to determine.
So and just to pin you down there, and I understand sure. your point about the credibility issues for the jury, but is there anything you can point us to in the record that would create a genuine issue of material fact that the city knew of ice after the first salting at 8 a.m.?
Yes, his return out there to do it a second time.
Okay. And why does that show that there's a fact question as to his actual knowledge as opposed to his testimony that it was election day and they were just being extra cautious?
Because that would go towards the way the jury hears the evidence. If the jury determines him going out there second time and using 50 pounds of salt is proof that there's a lot more ice out there than he's saying, that's enough evidence for them to determine in my client's favor. But it's a fact question when it comes down to it, and it should be made by the jury, not by the court. That's our position, and my client should have a right to go to the jury, and if the jury determines they did a good enough job, then we lose. But she should have that right to do it. Unless there's something else, I can save the time. They took in the last
one.
See
no other questions.
Great.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for respondent, you will have 15 minutes. Please state your name for the record and the party you're representing. You may proceed when you are ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. Counsel, my name is Paul Merwin. I'm here on behalf of the respondent, the city of Edina. A plaintiff has to present some evidence, actual evidence of negligence to survive summary judgment and get to that jury. Evidence of an accident alone is not evidence of negligence, and there's been no evidence of negligence. This is a case where a city, I think somewhat to a defense lawyer's relief, actually did the stuff we advised them to do and hoped they do. They developed a policy, they implemented it, and they documented it. They actually had a log, which they filled out, and that's not always what happens.
Counsel, if I can interrupt, why isn't the combination of the maintenance log, which lists a little bit of ice at least, and the second trip out by Mr. Phillips to do another round of salting, enough to create at least an issue of fact as far as whether the city was on constructive notice of a dangerous condition?
Sure. Well, we have the log, again, which he filled out. And I think just to fill in the timeline, he was out there at least 5 a.m. to put out signs. He was out at 8 a.m. to salt. He was out at 10 a.m. to salt. And we believe Ms. Gower fell around 9:15, I think it was.
How do we know that? I can't find that in the record.
I believe it was in the original complaint, and it may be something we didn't put. But I can say with certainty it was between the two 8 a.m. and 10 a.m. saltings. And what Mr. Phillips testified to is he put little because he didn't think there was none. He talked about he was putting ice down more as a precautionary matter. He said he definitely didn't see any sort of ridge, any ice with ridges and hummocks, which I think is the language that the law uses to describe ice that's been there for a while. And we certainly didn't see that. He talked more about the conditions. And if you look at the conditions he wrote down, it was, you know, 33, 34 degrees and kind of damp, which are conditions in which, you know, you get freeze-thaw conditions. So they responded by putting down 100 pounds of salt in that cul-de-sac area. So he wasn't talking about a specific ridged hummock, been there a long time, patch of ice. There's no evidence that he saw that.
Although that's how the plaintiff appellant describes it as bumpy ice, right?
That is correct. And it is a summary judgment motion, so we have to accept that as true. I don't think I would concede that there's no doubt as to whether that happened. I would say for the purposes of summary judgment, we accept that as true.
So is your argument that the evidence is no, that there's not sufficient evidence to place before a jury on breach or on the existence of a duty?
I think both. On both. On duty, we have that, first of all, there was no notice of a dangerous condition, and if there was, it would have been open and obvious to the plaintiff. And then on breach, you have to present some evidence of a failure of reasonable care. The issue is not, again, was there an accident? Was there? It's whether the city took reasonable steps. And, of course, there's a universe where someone can take reasonable steps and ice can still form. That alone is not evidence
of
negligence.
And accidents happen, and that's why we have juries, right? I mean, issues of breach are almost always for a jury, aren't they?
Well, but you still have to present some evidence that shows there was a failure of reasonable care, and I've not heard anything that says, well, here's what the city should have done or what they failed to do properly. What do you want them to do when it's 33 degrees and kind of, you know, right on the freezing line? You want them to go out and put a bunch of salt down. This is sort of like, kind of like a you missed a spot, and that's the standard. But that's not the standard. The standard isn't that you have to hold everybody's hand and walk them through because you might have missed a spot somewhere. It's that you take reasonable steps. And in this case, they did take reasonable steps. And, in fact, they went beyond what I would call reasonable steps, and they took extra precaution. The notion that because you went out and salted twice is sort of evidence of a problem rather than a proactive solution kind of feels like a little bit of no good deed is going unpunished here, that, you know, there's definitely nothing in the record that shows they went out and put more because they found ice and had to deal with it. It was more that we've got a lot of people coming to vote. The population that votes tends to skew older, so we're going to take extra care. And, you know, in his deposition, he described that the amount of salt he put down was so much that people were tracking it into the building, and then they were having trouble because the doors weren't closing. People were depositing so much ice on the, or so much salt on the mats as they were cleaning it off as they went in the building. So if this is not enough, you know, to establish a reasonable care, then what is reasonable care, I guess? And what evidence do we have of anything other than that being reasonable care? There's no evidence whatsoever that that's not a reasonable standard. We did make immunity arguments. Those are often reflective of the conduct being challenged. I made a statutory immunity argument. I'll say I don't think this case is about statutory immunity so much. They're not really going after whether we had a policy or not. It's more about the discretionary common law immunity, because they're talking more that Jeffrey Phillips as an individual failed to, I guess, catch every spot. And I do think that's pretty clearly common law official immunity. It's an operational level decision. He exercised operational level judgment. Plaintiff described it as that he had a non-discretionary ministerial duty to perform his job. This is from page 11 of their brief. His job was to salt and take care of the sidewalk. Well, that's not a ministerial duty. That's not a fixed and certain duty. There's a quote that's attributed to General Patton, which says, never tell people how to do things, tell them what to do, and they'll surprise you with their ingenuity. And this is a case where Mr. Phillips was not told what to do, or he was not told how to do it. He was told what to do. He was told, make the area safe. And he decided how to do it. He decided to go out and put down ice. He inspected it. He logged his inspections. And he put down salt twice in substantial amounts. And
Council, do we have any case, which is to say I'm not sure that we do, in Minnesota about addressing whether salting specifically of an icy condition is ministerial or not for purposes of immunity?
I'm not aware of any case that goes to that level of detail. Yeah. And I would say that if anything, I know the absence is not proof of anything, but that is the type of thing that I don't think the courts are going to get into in an immunity analysis, at least, because that's exactly the sort of thing that we say, you know, did you make a real judgment call on this? Was it reasonable, you know, of the various tools you have, which I guess include, you know, salting the whole thing, going out with an ice chipper around. He clearly wrote that there wasn't, he didn't find any ice that was, you know, sort of chippable to go out and take down. So other than, I don't know, personally escorting people into the building, I'm not sure what other options were available to them. You know, in contrast, if the argument or if the directions he'd been given had been apply 50 pounds of ice to the sidewalk twice, that's a specific duty. That's a fixed and certain duty that you have to meet. And we did cite to a couple cases that deal with that specifically. There's an unpublished one which I cited, and I like to cite, not because it's the best case, just because I argued it and I'm most familiar with it, and that's the Living Springs Church case. And that dealt with a utility worker who was doing sewer and water maintenance and was opening some valves. Unbeknownst to him, there was a valve that had been installed into a church, and on the church's end, they hadn't put a cap on the line, so there was just an open line going into the church, and he was trying to decide, you know, I'm supposed to exercise these valves and turn them on and make sure they're working properly, so he turned the valve on, and it flooded the church, unfortunately. And the court in that case went through an analysis saying, well, we didn't have a specific policy or a protocol that told him how to do this. He was out there making his own decisions. It wasn't necessarily rocket science, but it was still up to him to identify the job and figure out the best way to do it, and therefore entitled to official immunity. In summary, I think, again, we've got no duty established because of lack of that it was open and obvious, no notice of a duty of dangerous condition. We have no breach because there's no evidence that they failed to exercise reasonable care, and then also common law official immunity. So unless you have any other questions, I can end my comments.
I see no further questions.
Thank you.
Also for appellant, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a couple of things. They went after duty by saying there's no notice and then saying, well, they did everything we told them to do. They did the log, they did this, they did that. That sounds a lot to me like notice. But on that particular day, he took actions indicated by doing the multiple saltings, by doing other activities, by actually writing on the log that there's ice, even if he puts there's a little ice, that there's notice that there's ice out there. As far as breach goes, their argument is he did reasonable care. Again, I'd submit reasonable care is an issue for the jury, that the jury should decide whether or not what they did was reasonable. They're taking in their argument everything Mr. Phillips said as being rock solid, complete. I would submit that if he had done those things, my client wouldn't have fallen out there. Now, I understand that just the fall doesn't create in and of itself negligence. But his actions by going out there twice, by using the amount of salt he did, that does at least put evidence in front of the jury. We have my client's testimony about what the ice was like out there and that she fell, and that the jury should be able to weigh their credibility and make that determination. If they find that it is indeed reasonable care, we lose. But that's a jury determination and not something the court should take away from us. Thank you.
Thank you both. Thank you, counsel, for your arguments and your briefing on the case. We will be issuing an opinion within the 90-day statutory time frame. That is our final in-person oral argument. We now will be in recess for our next case, which will be via Zoom.